Hello, hello. This is Kathavani. Welcome back to another episode of Ramayana Ayodhya Khanda, episode 23, Bharata Returns. Thank you for listening. Tumultuous events were unfolding in Ayodhya after King Dasharatha's death. Meanwhile, Rama, Lakshmana and Sita were admiring attractions near their new home in Chitrakuta, unaware of the calamity in Ayodhya. They lived in quiet harmony, carrying out their daily duties, gathering food and wood, finding comfort in their scenic surroundings and spending their leisure discovering waterfalls and hermitages in their new neighborhood. They lived close to the beautiful Mandakini River that was visited by all the inhabitants, people, animals of the forest and water birds of various kinds. The river banks were dotted with trees bearing fruits and flowers. The sandbanks sparkled like crystal. The river glistened like diamond stones and other gems, interspersed with flowers and fruits floating in the water. Rama, delighted in showing Sita these small wonders in the untamed natural settings all across Chitrakuta Mountains and the Mandakini River. Lakshmana took pleasure in seeing them together, enjoying simple joys as if this was heaven. They carried on together, holding no grievances about the injustices and ordeals of the last week. Rama strived to make sure Sita was comfortable, protected and pleased in her new surroundings. Lakshmana, the devoted brother, exceeded any devotee's services by anticipating his brother Rama's needs, which were predominantly focused around Sita. Sita was easily pleased, expressing joy at even the slightest uncommon sight. She remained fearless and uncomplaining about the change in her circumstances from being a princess in a palace to an ascetic's wife in a hermit's hut. She was wholly content being with Rama. Rama too had no regrets or hard feelings about his renunciations. He carried out his dharma duty, living a simple life and being a good husband and a supportive brother. Every service Sita and Lakshmana offered him was appreciated, praised and accepted. He cherished their company during his exile. His attitude guided Sita and Lakshmana's sensibilities as well. They were respectful of all the other inhabitants of the Chitrakuta Mountains, rishis, ascetics, siddhas, enlightened ones and the indigenous tribes. Meanwhile, in Ayodhya, the palace and city descended into darkness again. Dasharatha's death so soon after Rama's departure plunged the people into more despair. The distraught wailing queens had been led away from King Dasharatha's mortal body. The palace staff and senior visitors realized Dasharatha's body needed to be preserved since his funeral rites could only be performed after his sons Bharata and Shatrughna returned. After consultation with the advisors of the kingdom, the mighty King Dasharatha's body was immersed in a tub of oil, scented with fragrances and herbs to preserve it. The lamentations of Dasharatha's wives, kinspeople and citizens were heard in the palace and outside. The city's people, bereft of Dasharatha unexpectedly, wailed in courtyards and squares. People denounced Kaikeyi as the cause of these adverse events. The day passed by across the whole kingdom like 100 years without respite from sorrow. People believed that without a king, they were headed towards catastrophe. These were times when people looked to the natural and supernatural for explanations about mishaps and events out of their control. They read events as omens and signs to predict and prepare for the future. Based on that, indeed, things did not look good. The coronation of the crown prince had stalled. Sacred ritual fires intended for the auspicious coronation ceremonies put out. The eldest prince Rama exiled for 14 years for no fault of his. All these signaled bad luck for the kingdom. Prince Rama had left Ayodhya as an ascetic dressed in bark, giving up his wealth and discarding his silk and gold ornaments. His gentle wife, Princess Sita, daughter of Rajarishi Janaka of Videha, followed him, preferring the forest Dandakaranya over Ayodhya. Prince Lakshmana too had abandoned Ayodhya to serve his older brother Rama. The king who had planned the coronation joyously had been helpless as the unfortunate events unfolded per his queen's wishes. Dashrata had fallen unconscious running after Rama's chariot and hadn't been seen since then. The distraught queens hadn't left the royal chambers either. The chief minister Sumatra brought home more bad news when he returned to Ayodhya after driving Rama's chariot to the forest. Their beloved Prince Rama had crossed River Ganga and would not return until his exile term of 14 years were fulfilled. Adding to this misery, now the king too was gone, unable to overcome the grief of losing his son Putrashok. The kingdom seemed vulnerable, especially given all these troubling events. The kingdom's older advisors, ministers, and gurus, who were still grappling with the events of the last week, worried the conditions were ripe for anarchy. Without a leader, they believed there would be no peace, safety, and freedom. They agreed that a new king from the Ikshwaku dynasty needed to be consecrated right away. So early the next morning, they visited Maharishi Vasishta and implored the wise sage to choose the next successor to the throne. Maharishi Valmiki, narrating this story, spends an entire chapter in the words of these ministers and advisors, listing the evils of anarchy that seemed imminent in a country without a king. These verses start with Arajaka, that translates to without a king, and also means anarchy. Here's a list of misfortunes, security and safety issues that were anticipated by these wise men in those days, many thousands of years ago, in a kingdom bereft of its king. In a country without a king, they claimed, the rains will fail, seeds will not be sown, nor sprout, children will be disrespectful, and wives will not be submissive to the head of the house. Neither wealth nor wives will remain, and worse still, there will be no truth. Without a king, there will be no events of pleasure, no assemblies or celebrations for the people, and no temples or public gardens. There will be no sacrificial rituals, no priests that learn the Vedas and practice the prescribed rituals. There will be no rich patrons distributing gifts in a country without a king. Artists and dancers cannot prosper. Without a king, disputes will not be settled. In a country bereft of a king, there will be no storytellers entertaining the people at the end of the day and into the night. Young women will not go out in the evenings. Young men who ride their chariots accompanied by young women will abstain from the public gardens. Farmers, traders, and the wealthy cannot sleep safely in their homes without securing their doors. Neither can traders and ascetics travel safely on the highways or stay in wayside travelers' inns and public houses with a peaceful mind. Without a king, the warriors will stop training, archers will stop practicing, and there will be no more security in possessions and no trust in the army or administration. A king guides between right and wrong, protects truth and righteousness, stands up for social good, and provides for the welfare of the people. For this reason, a king of excellent conduct surpasses Yama, the god of death, Varuna, the god of rain, and Indra, the leader of gods. It is interesting that even in those days, people believed a good leader as the head of an administration was necessary for the general welfare and security of society. Addressing sage Vasishta, these ministers appealed to him, "We listen to you even when our king was alive. Without him, we will support your choice of an illustrious son of the Ikshwaku clan as our worthy king." The illustrious sage, Vasishta, listened attentively to these concerns and then responded, "Bharata, on whom this crown has already been conferred, is living happily with his brother Shatrughna in his uncle's house in Kekaya. Let's send swift messengers to bring back the courageous brothers right away. There is no need for further deliberation. Then, with the approval of these counselors, he summoned the royal messengers and instructed them to take word to Bharata to return at once. He directed them not to inform Bharata about Rama's exile or the king's death. As a sign of normalcy, he asked the messengers to take gifts of silk, valuable ornaments, and gems to the Kekaya royalty. These excellent messengers completed the arrangements for their journey quickly, packing food and other needs, and left Ayodhya on swift horses. Maharishi Valmiki describes their journey and geographical landmarks of ancient India in good detail. The messengers traveled west, then north along River Malini in Uttarakhand, crossed River Ganga at Hastinapur near present-day New Delhi. They continued west, swiftly crossing the Panchala kingdom and passing by other exotic and pilgrimage locations. They limited their stops only to rest the horses and refresh them without stopping for too long. Finally, they passed River Vipasa, present-day River Bias in Punjab state in western India, and soon after reached Girivraja, the capital city of Kekaya kingdom, after nightfall. Kekaya kingdom was in the present-day Indian state of Punjab and extended westward into Pakistan, and was enriched by many rivers that originated in the Himalayas. Following Sage Vasishta's instructions, the messengers made their way towards the Rajagriha, the royal house, to rest, planning to see Prince Bharata at dawn. The same night the messengers from Ayodhya arrived in the city, Prince Bharata, living with his maternal uncle in the Kekaya royal home, had a nightmare in the pre-dawn hour. Dreams and nightmares of pre-dawn hours were believed to portend impending events. Awakened by the nightmare, Bharata worried about the safety of his father and brothers in Ayodhya. His vivid dream seemed like a premonition of death, either of the king or Rama or himself. He was justifiably distressed and restless even in the midst of his bandhus or relatives. In response to someone's query about his uneasiness, he narrated the details of his dreams, predominantly about his father, King Dasharatha. In his nightmare, his father was falling from a mountain peak and was floating in a pool of cow dung, immersed in oil, and was dragged away riding donkeys and eating food meant for Pitrus, dead ancestors. Bharata also dreamed of the world being destroyed, earth plunged in darkness, covered in smoke, breaking out in fires, and mountains crumbling. A common interpretation in those days, a chariot drawn by donkeys in a dream signaled death to the rider. Dried cow dung was used as fuel for cremation on funeral pyres as well. Bharata, of a pure mind, was disturbed by these vivid scenes and struggled with an unshakable fear for his family's welfare. Around the same time, the messengers from Ayodhya were ushered into court. The messengers paid their respects to the king, Ashwapati, and Prince Yudhajit of Kekaya kingdom. They were honored by the Kekaya royalty as per tradition extended to messengers from allies. The Kekaya king inquired about King Dasharatha, his queens, and their own princess Kaikeyi, and the messengers passed on similar regards and inquiries from Ayodhya about the general welfare of Kekaya's king, his kinsmen, and citizens. The messengers bowed and greeted Prince Bharata and Prince Shatrughna. They passed on the silk clothes, gold and gemstone ornaments from Ayodhya to the princes to present as gifts to Bharata's Kekaya family. Bharata delivered the gifts from Ayodhya to his uncle, Prince Yudhajit, and grandfather, King Ashwapati, before he returned to speak to the messengers. He inquired about the welfare of his father, mothers, and brothers. The messengers responded courteously but tersely, reassuring that his family in Ayodhya was healthy and that his immediate return was sought by the chief guru Maharishi Vasishtha and other counselors. They urged him to yoke his chariot without delay and return home with them right away. Bharata, showing no apprehension, took leave of his grandfather and his uncle. The Kekaya king, as per protocol, ordered specialty gifts from Kekaya kingdom as well as a small army to accompany Bharata home. Bharata completed the arrangements to leave right away, promising to return whenever his grandfather or uncle wished to see him again. Very soon, a caravan carrying gifts from Kekaya royalty, Bharata's grandfather and uncle, including more than 100 chariots of well-rounded wheels, camels, oxen, horses, elephants, and dogs, was ready to follow the Ayodhya princes. Maharishi Valmiki, the author of Ramayana, details their journey back across rivers, past mountains, showing his extensive knowledge of the geography of the region. Bharata, along with Shatrughna and the messengers, soon pulled away, hurrying ahead on their swift chariots and horses, while the convoy laden with gifts and animals lumbered behind. It took Bharata and his companions 7 days to travel across the many terrains, cross the rivers, including River Ganges. They arrived in Ayodhya as the sun rose on the morning of the 8th day since they departed from Kekaya. Bharata was excited to see Ayodhya in the distance. As they rode in on the highway, he noticed the road leading into the city wasn't busy as usual with traders, farmers, warriors, musicians, and other important people. There usually was a constant traffic in either direction coming in or leaving the moated city, on horses, elephants, oxen, carts, and even by foot. Entering the main roadways that led to the gates of the inner city, he became more apprehensive, observing the absence of normal noisy clamor. The gardens where people would stroll leisurely at this hour were deserted. The streets seemed abandoned and immersed in heavy darkness. The songbirds didn't chirp, as if noticing the absence of lovers in the public gardens. The trees along the way seemed to be bent in sorrow. Bharata wondered aloud about the missing sounds and smells of morning rituals. No musical instruments could be heard, and there was no scent of burning incense, fragrant sandalwood, or sweet-smelling flowers gathered for worship and decoration. Maharishi Valmiki mentions the divine string instrument Veena, percussion instrument Mridanga, and wind instrument Beri, a trumpet, as he describes the missing morning sounds. These ancient instruments are still played in India and are a significant part of solo and classical music orchestra and concerts. In Ayodhya, there was no joy or cheer that morning. Bharata could sense the desperation in his city. He was chilled and stunned to see the empty streets and voiced his concerns to his companions. His fears for his family emerged again as he crossed the city gates on his exhausted horses. The doorkeepers cheered him as he crossed the gate, as they would a king, and followed him inside. Bharata, though thrown into more confusion, returned their greetings. He wondered about sage Vasishtha sending for him. He saw unholy sights everywhere, unswept and unwashed entrances to houses and buildings, traders neglecting their sales, temples deserted with no offerings made, gardens abandoned, deserted squares, which were usually flocked by people, traders, soldiers, nobles, warriors, and young women. Bharata remarked to his companions that seeing these signs that he'd heard that typically marked the end of a king filled him with grief and great fear. Distressed, he rushed to his father's palace to greet him and be reassured. He did not see his father presiding in court. Confused, he made his way to his mother's palace to see her and catch up on events in his absence. He knew as well that his father preferred spending time in his mother's chambers and hoped he would see him there that morning. Queen Kaikeyi was delighted to see her son Bharata and welcomed him warmly, rushing forward to embrace him. Bharata, moving forward to touch her feet to show his respects, noticed the cheerless apartment and gloomy attendants. He answered Kaikeyi's queries about her father and brother and her home country. He informed her that he'd rushed ahead with Shatrughna since the convoy of work animals heavily laden with gifts from her father and brother traveled slowly. Mother, I was summoned back to Ayodhya and I returned as quickly as I could. I am disappointed to see the cheerless city and palace and this empty gold couch where father usually sits. Please tell me where my father is so I can pay my respects at his feet right away. Is he in Mother Kausalya's chambers? Kaikeyi, still driven by her desire to see her son Bharata as king, shared the dreadful tidings with him. Your illustrious and brilliant father, who is the refuge of the virtuous and performs many sacrifices, has attained the same place that all living things go to. On hearing this, Bharata was overcome by immense grief and fell to the ground unconscious. On being revived, he spoke, grief-stricken, choked by tears, lamenting his father's passing and his own misfortune for not being with his father to alleviate his pain in his last days. Kaikeyi was shocked to see his anguish and spoke to him firmly. Arise, arise, my child. Why do you roll on the ground wailing? Learned as you are, worthy of honor in a court for your wisdom, you should not grieve like this. Bharata responded, I came rushing back, looking forward to seeing the consecration of Rama as crown prince or the king performing an immense sacrifice. I was looking forward to being greeted lovingly by my father, who dust the dirt off my clothes. My mind is now shattered that I won't see my affectionate father again. What ailment caused his unexpected death? Lucky is Rama, who was with him and performed his last rites. Please send word that I have returned to Rama, who is now my father, brother, friend, and master. He is my refuge. I'd like to hear my father's last words and his messages for me before he passed. Kaikeyi, her mind still poisoned by greed, responded, Your father cried out, Fortunate would be those that see Rama return to Ayodhya with Lakshmana and Sita. Their desires will be fulfilled. And calling out, O Rama, he died. Bharata, even more distressed, hearing the second unfortunate news that his brothers too were not with his father in his dying days, inquired where they had gone. Kaikeyi, Sage Valmiki, the narrator says, related the events of Rama's departure to Dandakaranya as a favorable outcome to Bharata, expecting him to welcome the news as well. Bharata, conscious of the honor of the Ikshvaku dynasty, questioned his mother about Rama's offense. Here, Sage Valmiki tells us more about the trespasses that could exile a member of royalty in those days. Did Rama, a virtuous man, Bharata asked, covet another man's wife? Did he desire another man's wealth or harm an innocent? Why has he been banished like a sinner who killed an embryo in the womb? Responding to the wise Bharata, Queen Kaikeyi, who was pleased with the outcome of her manipulations that gained her son the kingdom, took credit saying, Son, hearing about Rama's coronation, I demanded two boons from your father that he had promised me earlier when I saved his life. I asked that you be crowned heir and Rama exiled to Dandakaranya. Rama left for the forest Dandakaranya with Sita and Lakshmana to fulfill your father's promises. Your renowned father, faithful to his word, could not bear the Putrashoka after banishing Rama. He succumbed to his grief and became one with the elements. She continued, encouraging her son, relishing her advisory role as queen mother. Bharata, all this has been done for you by me. You know your dharma, duty. Assume kingship. Complete the funeral rites to your father under the guidance of Maharishi Vasishta. Take control of the city and the kingdom. Give up your sorrow and agony. Be courageous and accept to be consecrated as the king of this world right away. Bharata, a wise and loyal prince, was exhausted after a 7-day horseback trip across the Indian subcontinent, crossing flooded rivers, mountains, and the many terrains swiftly. He heard the summon and arrived home as soon as possible to find the city of Ayodhya in despair, his father's passing without his sons by his side, the delayed funeral rites, his brother Rama's stalled coronation and subsequent exile. To top it all, his mother claimed responsibility for making him, Bharata, king. In the next episode, we will hear more from this prince, renowned for his wisdom, patience, and sacrifices. Until then, Ram Ram.